Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving. Living and Thriving. Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. It's Thursday, it's Living and Thriving time, and I'm Rusty, and I'm so excited because this is my favorite day of the week. Okay, so every day that ends in Y is my favorite day of the week, but today is extra special because I get to bring you and introduce you to some of the most incredible people from all sections of the world, and they inspire, and they motivate, and they make me cry, and I'm so wishing that I could just put them in little vials and stick them in my pocket because they're just amazing. You know, it's when you can get over hurdles and you can get through the mud and you can get through the bullshit of life and you can still come out on top and be like, you know what? I love my deliciously, beautifully flawed self. You're a Shiro hero to me. I love it. And our next guest is Kathy Hannigan. She's a miracle worker, but you know what? Her and I have so much in common because she lost everything. She lost her identity, her health, her status, her house, her savings, everything. Imagine being 60 years old and losing everything. I am 43 and I've lost everything 3 years ago, and I'm just rebuilding my life, as all of you who have stayed with us over the last 5 years know. And I couldn't imagine, you know, 30 years from now or 20 years from now or 50 years from now having to start all over again because I'm tired. So I'm looking forward to talking to her and finding out what inspires her to be her and do what she does. Next week, we have James Ventry. He is the author of Hypocrisy of America, and that's going to be interesting because it's kind of stepping outside of our living and thriving box, and I want to see what inspires him to be so passionate and such an advocate for the American culture and American history and American thinking. So that'll be next Thursday. And I might have a surprise guest in the morning. You never know. But because I'm so excited about having Kathleen on, I'm going to pull her on now. And hopefully she's out there. Hello, hello, hello. Kathleen, are you out there? Hello, hello. I don't know if she's out there. We have quite a few callers on today. So if you're out there, Kathleen, feel free to tune in at 929-477-1165. And all of you who are sneaking us in your office, definitely, definitely go to the chat room. Tune in. Give us your questions. Hello, are you out there, Kathleen? Well, I don't know. It looks like she's out there, but there's no response. So maybe, like our friend Lola last week, she needs to get a tinfoil hat. That's just kind of the way it works sometimes. I don't know. So today has been really interesting. Chloe and I are still really, really tired from our journey from Florida to New England, and we're both exhausted. And we stopped at one of my favorite little chains to get a turkey burger, and they don't make turkey burgers anymore. 99, you foiled me. I can't come to you again. That's it. It's the only reason why I came. My heart is broken and my belly is empty. Very sad. I'm going to get hangry soon. We can't have that now, can we? Let's see. Well, she was on and then she disappeared. So I'm not really quite sure, but I have a feeling she's having technical difficulties. It is one of those weeks. I don't know. Crazy. Chloe is turning 14 on Tuesday, and my heart just breaks because she's getting old, which makes me older, which makes it, well, you know, getting ready for college, getting ready for all that stuff. Going to have to get a car. We got her first bank account today. She's getting ready for her first job. Just all these firsts this year, transitions and growing. It's amazing. Let's see if I can find Miss Kathleen. The puppies are loving the trip today because they're just getting so much attention from everybody. And I'm not sure that they're going to want to come home. Give you a little history of Kathleen. I know that she's trying to dial in. She's having some technical difficulties. She was self-employed for 25 years. She took a job at a clinic where she earned less in a day than she earned and used to earn in 1 hour, which I totally relate to. And she moved in with friends. She was hardly surviving because, you know, wage and housing ratios are so vastly paralyzing in this country. It's baffling to me. But something happened at the clinic, and we're going to find out what when we can connect with her. Is that you, my friend Kathleen?
This
Hello?
Is, yeah. And I tried to tried to connect on the computer, but I couldn't. So
yay,
I didn't quite know what more to do.
Okay.
I've been here.
Yeah. No, I know. You keep popping in and off, and I'm like, all right, I know she's having technical difficulties. All right, so enough of that. I want to know who you are, what you do, and I'm so excited about having you on the show because you and I have so much in common. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And the power of the story and the power of the learning is what the show is all about. So take it away, Kathleen. Who are you? What do you do, and what inspires you to be you?
Okay. So, well, I think I'm a medicine woman, I guess, at this point. I mean, I have a lot of medicine in my bag, you know, at this point. But it as you had mentioned when you were reading my bio, well, I had been doing this work as a psychotherapist for a long time, and I didn't see myself. I didn't realize really fully my gifts. I was simply doing it, you know, and I wanted to make a bigger difference, and I decided, and it wasn't even a decision like of the mind, it was of the heart after I'd gone to the jungle and had, you know, a big awakening with plant medicine. I came back and I got the message to sell my house, my beautiful house, which I call my temple, and go on a journey. And I started by going back to Massachusetts, where I had grown up and had left over 40 years before. And I stayed with my parents for a while. And I got to know them as an adult and had some powerful healing. But I knew that that's not where I needed to stay. And I went ahead and I hired some really supposedly very good coaches to help me with, you know, getting my message out online. But the truth is, are you still there?
I am here, and because I am on the road, I'm traveling this summer, I mute out, so it just takes me a second to pull back, but run with it, because it's exactly what I want you to do. You're doing exactly perfect.
Yeah. All right. So I basically paid a lot of money to get that help, and I had very good motivation. I wanted to help more people, because I was helping families, I was helping one person at a time, I was helping couples a lot. But I thought, well, I know I have a message. But when it came right down to it, it was really hard to articulate my message. And I didn't know that because I had been doing it in a smaller way for a long time. And then because at that time, and this was in 2010, online marketing and the whole internet marketing world was, it was different than it is now. People were... in a way, I kind of drank the Kool-Aid for a little while. I thought I could follow their advice and be successful the way I had been before. But some of what I was being taught went so against my core values, you know, like really charging people enormous amounts of money, not letting them get off the phone if they didn't get their credit card, you know, not giving really a lot of substance to people, but, you know, giving formulas. And I found myself getting sick.
Yeah, I can
both emotionally
totally relate
and physically.
To that.
Yeah.
And
but
that
then,
whole,
but I
that whole world is... that whole world has become something very predatory versus what it, mm-hmm. the intention was. And in a world that's mm-hmm. hand over fist commercialized, you can't even go to the bathroom in most places in this mm-hmm. country anymore without there being a TV and they're boggling your mind or distracting you with some sort mm-hmm. of, you're
yeah.
beautiful in,
yeah.
in one commercial and you're fat in the next commercial. So,
yeah. And it was a lot about,
it does make you,
you know, and plus it was a lot about glamour and being glamorous and how you looked and image. And I was all about the inside, you know?
Right.
And, but you know what happened, Rusty, that for me, for a little while, I went into doubting myself. And you know, when you're in your late 50s, when that happens, it was really hard because I didn't know, for a while I didn't know who I was, and
right.
that loss of identity was absolutely for me a necessary part of the journey. And I say, and I write about this in my book, that I did I took a heroine's journey, and
right.
I entered down into the bottom, into the belly of the beast, which is the part of the journey when you really are lost. And at that time, I basically, and I moved across the country to Portland, Oregon to be with my daughter, but then she wouldn't talk to me and she wouldn't tell me why. I mean, everything started to unravel and my health went down and I literally became very sick. And I couldn't make any money. I mean, I was just really barely making it. And I had been very successful. I had a beautiful home. I made a lot of money. I never had to market. People just came to me. And I
right.
was going to networking meetings. And, everybody was supposed to be a prospect. I was a prospect for everyone else. It was very predatory, you know. And,
yeah.
and finally, I said, you know, I have to be humble enough to, you know, I moved in with friends. And I got a job in a clinic. And I was like a job that a rookie would get like coming out of social work school, you know?
Right.
And I literally, by the time 11 o'clock in the day came around, I was working in a room with no windows that was so cold. My fingers were blue by 11 o'clock. And what was interesting is that Obamacare had just happened. And out of the woodwork, all of these people came to the clinic, people who were like out from the country or, you know, really broken, people who had a lot of PTSD, people who had been raped, people with, you know, domestic violence, kids in trouble. Like I, one after the other, I sat there with people. And as I did
yep.
that, a miracle happened. I was like, this is what I do. I had
mm-hmm.
left all my medicine had behind to do this thing that I didn't realize I'd had. It was like, you know, Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. I was back home again. I was helping people. And
right.
my energy started to come back. And I realized that obviously I couldn't stay in that clinic very long and it was a bit unethical. And I spoke truth to power and I got fired. and there I was, you know, I'm like nearly 60 years old. And I knew that that moment when I got fired meant, like, this is not where you're going to stay. And I went back to the East Coast. I went back to where I had been. And
yeah.
I think had I not been humbled by my experience, I would have gone back with shame. But I didn't. I went back with enormous humility because I realized that I still had within me everything I needed to rebuild my life. I didn't have to pay anybody to do that. That I had, and what I now call my love seed, I had all the resources inside. And that even though I had no money, and I didn't have an office, and I really didn't even have a place to live, I actually lived with my sister when I first came back, that I had everything I needed. And I was so grateful for every little thing at that point, like where I had taken for granted my big house and my successful practice, when I was able to rent a little office and, you know, he reduced the price for the first few months because he knew I didn't have any clients and he was kind to
Aww.
Me. I just broke down and cried, and I thanked him so much. And, you know, it wasn't very long at all before my practice was booming again. And because, you know, this is what I do and what I do well. And it's like at this point I have two beautiful ongoing women's circles. And on June 14th, I close on a big house in the mountains of Virginia with two other women, and we're opening a retreat center. And it, not only is the dream that I, you know, had for a long time coming true, but I'm doing it with others. I don't have to do it alone. You know, I learned that lesson that I couldn't do it alone. And so that's
so
what happened.
What was,
and,
what was the point in which you really, you know, I know for me, realizing that my resources were truly not my resources. They were very conveniently resourceful if you were to give back to them. But when you just needed, they disappeared. Very painful realization.
Yeah.
Especially when you've spent a chunk of your life thinking that they loved you unconditionally, but it was always with condition, and you realize that.
Yeah.
So we hit rough bottom. We lived in a car. It was awful. And my ex-husband, who he is, and that whole story. When was that cosmic pivotal 2x4 that just crushed you in your knees that you said, oh my God, things have to change or they're just not? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there was that, you know, I was at the clinic and I was just like eking by. I was doing my very best. A lot of people kept saying, declare bankruptcy. And I was thinking,
right. I heard that too.
You know, I didn't really want to. I felt like this was, for one thing, you're trying to shrink yourself down when you do that. And I wanted to grow myself, right? So it didn't energetically mean for me, it didn't mean freedom to me. So I got fired from this job, right? And it was a crazy situation. I was very I was anxious and I was worried and I wasn't sleeping. I actually went through a spell of not sleeping, which happens a lot when we get older, right?
Yep,
and
absolutely.
I went to a nurse. I went to a nurse in the clinic and I said, "What would I have to do to get one Ambien?" Just to break this cycle, do I have, you know, like the what would I have to do meant like, do I have to go through one of the docs? She then reported me as drug seeking to the head of the clinic. Yeah, and I got fired. But I had also been making waves because there was some unethical practices there, and I was making waves about it. So it was just kind of a convenience. So.
They found a way to let you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went through that with a technology company in New England. I was at 150% of my quota because I made complaints about the childcare, they found a sneaky way to get rid of me. So,
I mean, I knew that. Yeah. And I also knew that it was part of the big plan, you know, the divine plan. And so then I went home and I made up this list of what I was going to do to build up my own practice out in Portland. This is in Portland, Oregon, and all the things I was going to do and da, da, da. And I was all fired up and I went to bed that night and I got up in the morning and I had zero desire to do any of that. All that, you know, brouhaha, networking and da, da.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no. And I felt it. And I said, be real, Kathleen. You don't want to do that. And I said, yeah, I don't. But I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And I really felt that. And I got, you know, what I did, I know this sounds maybe silly, but I railed at God. I got so pissed off. I said, I listened to what you said. I sold my house. I gave up my practice. I spent all my money. I did everything. I thought I was supposed to do, and look at where I am. Damn it. You're going to have to help me out. And I had to go to an appointment. I said, all right, I'm getting in the car, and I'm not thinking about it. I'm putting the music on, and when you have any ideas, let me know. I really was in not knowing. I mean,
Yeah.
You know, it's scary when you really don't know, but there's something liberating when you admit it. And so I did. I put the music on. I was driving, and suddenly I heard a voice say, "Go back to Northern Virginia." And I said, I thought, okay, let me try that on. And I thought about
right.
it, and I got a yes. I immediately called up my sister, Peggy, and I said, "Peggy, I'm coming back to Northern Virginia." And she said, "Oh, I knew you'd be back." I said, "Well, I'm glad you knew. I decided." She said, "You can stay
right.
in my basement until you get back on my on your feet." And I did. I stayed there for 4 months. I built them a garden. Then I got a one-room, a little studio apartment. I lived in that one room with my dog for a year. Now, I had had a big, huge house, right? And so that was the moment when I said that I didn't know, and I asked for help in a really big way. That was the moment. And
right.
from then on, I just, like, I got out of the way. Like, whatever I thought I was supposed to do, I just sort of, like, I started really taking guidance. And honestly, it's been miraculous. It's been, in fact, the second day I got back to Northern Virginia, I went to this little town that I live in, and I was walking down the street because I said, I'm going to live in that town. I love that little town. It's called Delray. And I ran into somebody. He used to be my massage therapist. And I said, "Michael, is that you?" He said, "Yeah, is that you, Kathy?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I'm looking for an apartment." He said, "Go down there and you'll see. It's the same building I'm in." I walked down. I called the number, couldn't get, left a message, got in my car to go back home. Before I hit the highway, I got a call. He said, "Yeah, you want to see the place?" I said, "I'm turning around." I went in. I met him. I'm still in that apartment. And you know what, Rusty? Every door I went, tried to walk through in Portland was like slammed in my face. I had ageism and everything. I go and I walk into this place and I said, "Oh, it's really nice. It's got skylights. That's really nice. How much is it?" And he told me and I said, "Well, I don't have any clients yet. Could I rent it for a day?" He said, "Well, no. Take it. And you only have to pay half price for the next 4 months.
Aww.
In January, if you don't have a full practice by then you're out of it. You don't have to. I won't hold you to anything."
Oh wow!
I gave him the biggest hug, and it was like that. Like doors were opening again. And
that's
I
great.
Think that I had to become very humble. I don't think that I was a grandiose person prior to that, but I think that I took a lot for granted, you know, even my gifts and my success, but I don't take anything for granted anymore. and it has been a miracle. It has been, like, my middle daughter said to me, she said after I was, you know, kind of a few months in the new place, she said, "Mom, do you think you're done with the Phoenix archetype yet?" You know, where you burn yourself down and then build yourself back up, you know. And I realized that the whole journey had been based on a pattern in my life where I put myself at risk with people who didn't have my best interests at heart, and that came from an earlier wound in my childhood, and then I played it out. And
well, and
once
let's encompass some of that and just kind of back it up, because this is where in the show where you get to, it's kind of the halfway mark, so you get
mm-hmm.
to pause, breathe, and we get to find out who you are, your name. Where do we find more information about you and what's coming next for you? And you've got like 4 minutes to kind of give your own little commercial and then we'll continue
okay.
the story.
That's great. Well, my name is Kathleen Hannigan and people can find me at www.kathleenhannigan.com and it's K-A-T-H-L-E-E-N Hanagan. And there's a book page on there, and actually there's a special right now for my book is muchly reduced until the 8th of June. It's for my birthday. My book is called Love Seed, The Template for Birthing a New World. And I ended up writing that book to share what happened for me and many other things in the book. There are case studies, and basically it's a roadmap for anybody who's interested in completely transforming their life from the inside out. And that's what I do. I help people do that. And I think the main thing that the two main things I help people to do is to develop that compassionate witness and to always look inside for the source of everything that's happening inside you, that things are mirrored on the outside, but the real point of change is inside. So that's my big message, and that when we do the work of our own personal transformation, that is what changes the world for the better. So that's my message. And on June 14th, I'll be closing on a big house in the mountains with two friends, and we're creating a retreat center called Love Seed Center. And I'm going to be having healers and teachers from all different aspects of the transformational journey come to our place to teach people. And I'll be one of those teachers, obviously. But so that's the next step right now, to leave a legacy. I'm 67. And at the time of one's life when you really want to leave behind something that people can really use to improve their lives. So that's where I am at this point.
Well, and I think that's beautiful. I think that there are more individuals who need to step up, step forward, and be open enough to have the conversation. This is where I was, this is where I've gone, and here I have risen up. And there's nothing wrong with having a Phoenix syndrome. I think, especially for women, we've been disempowered for thousands of years. I think it's really a delicious attribute to the strength and the sacrifices that we've made, and the almost caged mentality we've had to genetically absorb. Because your story is genetic. So whatever I do as a parent genetically gets transposed into my children, and they either repeat or they repel. And that's cool. You know, it's just a journey. Yeah. My kid is really lucky because I'm just, a tree-loving hippie who's like, oh, hey, let's try this. Not, you have to do this because we'll have the white picket fence and blah, blah, blah. But not all kids have that privilege. So we all have to grow through the dirt and the rocks and that process on our own accord, in our own way. And sometimes we fumble. Like, I'm as stubborn as can be. I am like that horribly stubborn child, and it's beautiful and it's delicious and it's a dichotomy, but I'm stubborn as shit. It's, even though I might hear and just like deuces them out, don't tell me what to do because I'm going to do it my way. That's always been my personality. And up until probably the last 5 years, I've started to listen. I know, it's a shocker. So it's an interesting journey as a woman, as a mother, as a human, as a single parent, like to kind of reinvent yourself, re-acknowledge who you are on a new level, because everything that I was is gone.
Reinvented completely.
But that's not an overnight process. Mm-hmm. It takes time to reinvent and it takes time to kind of get to know who you are. Like, it's neat to be like, oh yeah, I really miss sitting here listening to music and just playing with art and doing my art. I miss that. I was married for 17 years and it wasn't a privilege that I was allowed to have because I was a mess maker in his mind. In my mind, I'm just creating and like zenning out. And so now getting good with that part again, it's like, whoa, I can do this. And there's no negativity towards that part of my person. And it's like, it's way better than it used to be. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like more available to that. So as you've grown through your story, what availability have you noticed with your change and your transition? Because that's really where the delicious part of being human is realizing what you are and what you missed and what you found out you were and you didn't know.
Right. It's like these parts of us that went into exile in our marriage or, you know, in a corporate setting or whatever. And, you know, for me, I was working really hard for a long time. I mean, I still do, but I wasn't taking enough time for one of the things that I love so much, which is dance. And so part of what I recommitted to once I got back here and I started to feel, physically better because I was back on track and I did a lot of work to get my health back. I started doing Five Rhythms dance and I love it. I mean, it's a wonderful workout, but like at the end of a week on a Friday night, when I go there with a whole bunch of other people that, you know, you start to get to know them because they come, you know, they don't come every week, but if you go often, you see them and you just smile and you're dancing and moving and you're expressing yourself. And at times when we may be doing like, there's a particular rhythm called chaos and you're screaming and you're getting all the frustration from the week out. I go home and take a hot bath and I'm a new person. So that's one thing that I've really been doing a lot. And the other is gardening. I mean, I have, you know, I just happen to have a green thumb and love, maybe it's the Irish, you know, the fairies, I'm really connected to them. And I can get things to grow in all kinds of places. So I do that a lot in between my, you know, like if I have time in the middle of the day, I have a break between clients, I'll go spend some time in the garden. But also, I wrote the book, you know, I'd wanted to write a book my whole life. But, you know, I didn't think I had all that much to write about until I had gone through this ordeal. And I thought, well, it may not be like the biggest thing in the world to write about, like, you know, like people go through, like they lose their legs and they, you know, all these things. But I thought, you know, and I met a lot of people like me and like you along the way who were older and had, you know, had a big dream and lost their money doing it. So I thought, well, there are a lot of people, whether it was like I did through the online market world or through investments that didn't work out, you know, if I can write a book that speaks to that loss of self and loss of identity and the shame that goes with it, but the healing that comes when you see it as the exact thing that you needed to grow, then that's what gave me the courage to write the book. You know, I feel really proud of it. And I know it's helping a lot of people. And I have a book of poetry coming out soon. And so it unleashed a lot of creativity. And I make sure I have time for it, where before I think I just was working too much. And, you know, and I needed to because I had the big house and everything. Now I live with two other women and a little boy. And I love being with, you know, in a group, not living alone, and not having to do everything alone. I that's a big thing that changed. I'm not the Lone Ranger anymore.
Well, and let's talk about that a little bit. We have a few more minutes to the show, and I can tell you it is extraordinarily, it was awe-inspiring when we had hit so bottom so hard, and I literally would sneak crying in the shower because I didn't want my daughter to see how weak I was. And yeah, you know, and it's like very humbling and it's very, and you feel awful and you feel like a failure and you feel disgusting and you feel like there's just so many emotions. There's like anger and depression and sadness and joy because you got out of the situation. There's always that joy, which people don't talk about when they hit rock bottom. They don't tell you that there's a little spark of joy there. And it's like, screw you. I'm out of the situation. Whatever that situation was, you're out.
Yeah.
And so there's
a
little tiny ember. there's like this ember of joy. And some people will smother it, and other people will just throw gasoline on it. And I'm the gasoline kind of person. I'm like, screw you. I'm out.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm going to burn this shit down because I'm reinventing myself no matter what. But if you go through this overwhelming pain, like your body, and you don't want to get up in the morning, and you don't want to drive, and you don't want to talk to people, and you just isolate yourself, and you're angry, and you're cold, and you're hot, and you're pissed, and you're happy, and like, it's
in part, I think,
beautiful.
that's with the, so much shame, because you're not, you know, you're not living up to the story you think you should have been living out, right? Like, I mean,
right, exactly.
The story of success or whatever that looks like, or the perfect marriage or whatever. Yeah, there's shame. And that's, you know, of all the emotions, it has the lowest vibration. And the only thing, I mean, I heard the, like, Rusty, I did hear the voices that said, you're a failure, you're this. But you know what? I didn't believe the voices. Because there was a part of me inside that knew that this was like my PhD program. I mean, this was the most powerful learning that I could go through, that I could lose all the outer trappings of success, and I could, you know, and be in that low place, but I was still me. I was still breathing. I still had a soul. I still could connect to spirit. I could still hear the birds sing. That meant anything was possible. You know, that's that. And like you say, you know, some of us, we grow that. We put, you know, we put fertilizer on it. We want to grow that little seed.
Right.
And others bury it. Right. And that's what the whole thing about love seed is like. No, nurture it. Put the, you know, your love is the water and the sunlight, your compassion, the compassion of others. All of those things help that seed grow. And that's what I want, I guess, is probably the most important message that I keep saying to people, is that everything that's happened and everything that's unfolding, you have a choice. How you see it, and you can heal and you can grow from anything and everything. Everything.
I, you know, it's this really, I find humans to be delightful. I find that we're hypocritical, we're cosmically flawed, we are juicily delightful, we are beautiful in this crazy mayhem roller coaster life. I just, you know, I've gotten really good with accepting that there is no rhyme or reason for what we do. We're just here to experience.
Yeah.
And in that acceptance, it's been very freeing. And I talk about this on every show because I really hope that one day most people will, you know, recognize that we're here to experience, and it's freeing to be experimental. Not in the sense of, you know, like killing yourself with drugs or something stupid like that. I mean, there's a middle here.
Yes.
In the sense of really being good with your human stuff. You're just this huge bag of bacteria and microbes, and you're liquid on the inside. That's it. That's all you are. You're like this huge universe. You know, I'm almost 6 feet tall, so I'm almost a 6 foot tall universe.
That's huge to think about.
Beautiful. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're just liquid on the inside, but we're a solar plex, a solar system for all of these other entities, and they rely on us. And so when you put the human requirements of thought, which I think is a human requirement, I don't think it's a cosmic requirement. I think it's human. We've boxed ourselves into this ideology that the white picket fence and the multimillion dollar job and the title CEO and watching TV and being politically on par with, you know, whatever political organization you connect with, these things are what make life. But if you were to actually look at the majority of people who live in that box, they're very stagnant and they're very unhappy and they drink too much and
yes.
they smoke too much and they cry too much and they have too much sex or they cheat on their partner. Like, there's just stuff that,
you know that.
Is not
yes.
part of what we're here to do. And it's beautiful because those people have to do their journey and they have to experience life in their own terms, on their own terms.
Yes. Yep.
But when you sit back and you have all of that taken away from you and you're stripped, and I call it, like, in my one of my books, Having Tea with My Skeletons, I talk about stripping my clothes completely off and standing in the middle of New York City, in the middle of, you know, Broadway, with daylight
yeah.
and traffic and thousands of people, and here are all the scars from my surgery, here's all the scars from my physical abuse, here's all the scars from my emotional abuse, and I paint hearts on my scars to try to love them and accept them for the lessons that they are. When you get that good and that good in perspective, your world is so different, isn't it?
Yeah. You're accepting that life is messy and that everything is in a way perfect, and including your scars and your wounds, and that, like you said, it's about being fully here and fully experiencing, you know, being a human being on earth at this time. And there's no supposed to, you know, there's not like it's supposed to be like this. That's all made up. There's no
exactly
supposed
right.
to, you know, like, but I do have a code. I want to say that I do have a code, you know, to live by, and it's not a supposed to, it's just like what I know from my core. And that is, kindness, compassion, like that is the code, you know, and starts with me. But other than that, there really aren't any rules, you know, and that's what people have to understand, you know. Like, you think about, you know, I have kids come to, I mostly deal with adults, but occasionally the adults will like their teenagers to come to me, and teens these days, they're like, so stressed out, like from all that's on their plates, you know, and sometimes their parents, like the kids are stressed out, they're cutting and they're bulimic or they're doing things, and the parents are like worried about their grades, right? And I have to sit down with the parents and say, no, wait a second here. Like, the grades are not as important as keeping her alive, keeping her healthy, her emotional well-being. Can we, like, reprioritize things? And normally they do. If they've been seeing me, they're willing to do that, you know? And like, it's not like, well, she's supposed to be getting her, you know, her SATs done now, but she's really depressed. So it's like
right.
really kind of helping people to get away from the supposed tos. And that way, like, you know, one of my favorite quotes is Byron Katie, and she says, when you argue with reality, you only lose 100% of the time, right?
Exactly
and,
right. Yep.
Like, there isn't, like, don't argue with it. It is what it is. And so, and sometimes it's really hard and it's sad and messy. It's messy a lot, you know?
It is
but
messy
it's
a
okay.
lot. And we have done a tremendous job over the last 60, 70 years to develop devices to distract us from the messiness. And
yeah.
I think in a lot of ways we've lost our poets, we've lost our dreamers, we've lost our artists, we've lost our romantic idols. You know, like when I was growing
yeah.
up, I had Shakespeare, I had Greek mythology, I had so many people to think about. Like, Rumi is my favorite. I swear to God, he's my husband, even though he's dead 5,000 years.
Yeah.
But there was a thought, there was a purpose, and you would take time and you would have the time and you weren't overstimulated by commercialization and the bullshit that we are trying to filter out of our lives for most of us. And I'm all about killing your TV. Like, I'm huge about that. And in that process of silencing our inner growth, we've become quite grotesque towards each other.
Yeah.
And we've
yeah.
become more fear-based in our thinking and fear-based in our reactions and fear-based. This country is a sue happy country. Like, you look at me funny, I'm going to sue you,
mm-hmm.
sue you for some benign, stupid shit that
yeah.
you didn't even
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
people are more trained to let go of being human and let go of that emotionality and more of hiding because it's safer. And in that causes a type of death in our community, don't you think?
I do. I think that it's, you know, it's not technology itself. It's our use of it and our abuse of devices. And it's hurting families. It's hurting relationships. It's hurting, it's interfering with sleep. It's interfering with full presence. You know, to be fully present is one of the greatest honors of existence, to be a present in your life. And so, yeah, I think like the pace, the rate of change is so fast that it's really hard for people to keep up. And
right.
So it's really heartwarming. Sometimes, you know, I'll see, go in a restaurant and see a bunch of young, like millennials, right? And they'll turn their phones off and put them in the middle. And the first person to pick it up pays for everybody. Like they're actually going to talk to each other. But that's
right.
Rare. I mostly see them on their phones and they're like taking pictures of their food and of one another, but like, are they present? You know?
Right.
And so there's, I think, I love that idea of like stepping back and looking at, you know, like back up the bus and look at your life and look at what you're prioritizing. And if it's not connection and love and kindness, then you're probably not going to be very happy, no matter how many Land Rovers you have, you know. you're probably not, and I see that. I see it.
Well, and people laugh at me until they actually think about what I say, and it cracks me up because I always say there's only a few things that you truly need in this life, and A, it's great sex, B, great food, C, great wine, and D, shitload of laughter. If you can get those things under your belt and make that the foundation of your life, and the wine can be alcoholic or non-alcoholic, not judging there. It's a metaphor. Get those things into perspective. Pull those things out. Have great sex. Have great relationships with people. Laugh your ass off. And treat your body well. Be happy in what you have. The rest falls in place. The rest is bullshit until then. Until you get really good with those four things, the rest is bullshit. It's fakeness. It's not authentic. It's not real. And you're not developing good relationships with people that are going to soulfully, cosmically, mentally, emotionally jive with your vibe. And as much as people kind of roll their eyes and like, must do whatever, you're always so positive. And I get letters months later going, oh, yeah, you're right. I'm like, yeah, do 21 days. Like, jive with your vibe for 21 days. Seriously. It takes 21 days to change any habit. So start eating and being in pleasure, not in a, you know, sex ring and whatever, but, like, seriously, moderation's always good. But have great sex. Have great laughter. Do things that raise your vibration so that you feel good. And not in the sense of subduing who you are, like with heroin and all those things that people do, but in the sense of genuinely being authentically you. And if anybody tries to step on that, just look at it as a test. Just say, hey, you're testing me. I'm going to say where I am. I'm really happy where I am. Good for you. Take care. And when you get over those hurdles, the world just opens up in this glorious place, doesn't it? It's just amazing.
It does. Yeah, it's so people underestimate the power of enjoyment and pleasure. You know, whether it be a meal, that's another thing I do is I cook amazing, absolutely amazing meals. Like I love cooking for people.
I'll be there at the end of July.
I do. I love it. And just that like enjoyment, and that's what you're saying, whether it's sex or nature or food or like dance or like feeling good is really important. It's you live longer. You live longer. And yet the statistics say that over 70% of Americans absolutely hate their jobs. And they got nothing left when they get home. And I, you know, I work a lot with couples, and couples are having way less sex nowadays, and the statistics show that. In part because they have those doggone devices and all the time that they're so busy and, you know, running around and or they're on antidepressants, probably 90% of them not needing to be, but they drank the Kool-Aid that big pharma can make your brain okay, when actually many other things could make your brain okay. You know,
exactly.
I'm not saying that you're going through like a really hard time, a rough divorce, 6 months of an antidepressant might help you, but you're not meant to be on those your whole life. And they depress your libido. They dampen your chi, your life force, you know? So I have I'm very outspoken about that kind of stuff. Actually, one of my wishes is to do a TED talk on that, on the importance of finding, you know, other ways to create our happiness, and that, you know, we are being dumbed down with a lot of the drugs. And but that's another whole, but I just want to mention that because that's part of what's going on, you know. But joy, pleasure is beautiful, you know. Pleasure of sitting in the sunlight with your cat, like they know how to live.
They do. And I have a friend whose cat ran away, and I'm like, it'll be back. Cats are just, they're not meant to be caged. And I don't believe humans are either. I don't believe we're not made that way. We're not designed to be caged. We're designed to be the fluid creatures that we are. And over time, we have had individuals wanting to box and contain us like pools. And we're not. We're rivers. We're this beautiful flowing essence of experience and pleasure and joy. And we need to get back to that before we don't exist any longer, you know?
Yeah.
Sad world.
Yeah.
So we only have a few more minutes left, Kathleen, and I really want to delve into what inspires you to be you. Give us your last few minutes of a great message on what you want people to take away, and then tell us where we can find more information about you. I'm going to mute out so you don't hear all the background noise, because this is really your time to shine.
Okay. What inspires me to be me? I really don't know how to be anything but me, to tell you the truth. I did try to do things like other people for a little while there, but it really, as I said, threw me off. So I went back to being me. And I think I'm blessed in that I've always had a strong life force. I do think that part of that is that I did have some woundings as a child that I had to overcome. I had to overcome hatred and anger because I was hurt. And I didn't want to live my life with hatred and anger. So it took me onto a path of transformation, very young, actually. And that journey has allowed me to transcend those, you know, darker emotions and to be a person who, like, really love leads my life. Love is what inspires me. Self-love, love of nature, love for animals, love for my friends, love for my children, for my grandson. I love deeply. And so, you know, everything I do is, you know, I ask myself, what would love do? You know, and love is telling me right now to open this center, this place where people can come and heal and get away from it all. And take the time to do the work that I know makes a difference in people's lives. So, I think when I see a person wake up out of the trance and become more aware and, you know, heal, that fills me up. It's what I do all the time, is help people to do that. And I will say that I am giving to people, but I am receiving so much when I see what changes happen for people in their lives. And I feel very, what also motivates me is I feel very responsible for the children, all of the children to come, for the future, that, you know, I'm of that boomer generation that we, you know, we created a lot of messes, and I want to be a part of the solution. So all of that is what keeps me going. People can you know, find out more about me. And there's a lot of wonderful free stuff on my website too, Kathleen at KathleenHennigan.com. So what also inspires me is just the joy of being a human in this human body. I guess I've always been a little bit of a hedonist, so that's a good thing, you know. I've always taken great pleasure in life, and I balance it out because I like to be healthy too. So that's what keeps me going.
There is nothing wrong with having a little hedonistic tendency, and again, it's all about balance. You know, you definitely have fun. Don't feel like you're too old to have fun, which is something that we have commercialized into an issue. And it cracks
never,
me up
never
when I
too old.
See these magazines when I go to the grocery store, and I see these magazines, what not to wear after 40. Bitch, I'm gonna wear whatever if you're lucky.
You're right. I'm gonna wear what I want to wear.
Exactly. Yeah. See you. Gotta go. But it's these these constructs that we've designed as a society over the years that really alienated us from growing into the beautiful, delightful pieces of liquid beauty that we are. And taking back our identity and taking back who we are as individuals and really coming out of those constructs is wild. It's a wild ride because you go, oh my God, there's so many more people like me than there were people like I was thinking that I was trying to be. And that's that I preface very clearly. There's so many more people that are organically like me than what I was thinking I needed to be. That's very powerful.
Yeah, that is powerful. I love that. It's true. Yes. I think we're all much more alike than not. And, you know, and when you get to the bottom of it, and I have the privilege of doing that with thousands of people, most everybody just wants to be loved, you know, at the bottom of it. So, yeah.
Well, and loved and safe and trusted and, you know, if you need a shoulder to cry on, to have that ability to do so and to feel safe that that's okay. And we've come up with this really fucked up, weird reality TV shit that doesn't exist, but it feeds into our fears and our id and our ego. And honestly, if we were to ever really, truly have a reality TV show, I'd love it on battered women. I'd love it on poverty. I'd love it on homeless. I'd love it on the real issues of life and not individuals who are well off, but they just have little kitty fights because they don't like what each other's wearing. That's not reality. That's not the way the real world works. That's, again, a form of heroin, you know, suffocating your own ability to be authentically you and making you feel like you need to be something that you're not. But anyway, I digress. We have about 30 seconds, so this is your time to say goodbye, give your last message, and your website one more time, Love Bugs.
Sure. I think my message to everybody is to develop a practice of gratitude and self-compassion. It will take you so far in life, and it will extend to so many others. Let kindness be your religion, as the Dalai Lama says. And you can find out more about me at www.KathleenHennigan.com, and definitely get my book, Love Seed, The Template for Birthing a New World. It's a map for your transformation. Thank you so much, Rusty. This was wonderful.
Thank you, Lovebug. And I'm so glad that we finally connected and we were able to meet, because it's beautiful to share the same planet with a beautiful soul and somebody who's doing good with her time. And bless you for that. And keep going. Keep on
Thank
being
you.
You.
Thank
All
you
right.
so much.
You
too.
To-
yeah.
You. Mwah. Love you.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. We were talking with Kathleen Hannigan. That's H-A-N-A-G-A-N. She is fantastic. I just want to curl up and just talk to her for hours and hours and hours, because I have a feeling it would just be delightful. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. And guess what? I'm Rusty. And today is my favorite day of the week. Because why? I get to connect you with people who are amazing, like Kathleen and Dr. Michael and Dr. Barbara this morning in regards to love and all of this beautiful stuff. Next Thursday is James Ventry, author of Hypocrisy of America. That's going to be kind of a stepping outside of the box for us, so I'm interested to see how that goes. You are loved. You are beautiful. Drive 5 miles slower. Sleep in 5 miles later. Life is gorgeous. And I'm so glad we do this together. Until next Thursday, be well.
Living and thriving with Rusty.